Esteemed by Comedy Central as one of the best stand-up comics of all time, Paula Poundstone is perhaps best known in the radio world for her regular appearances on the NPR comedy quiz show.
Wait, wait, don't tell me.
Fresh on the heels of the release of her new memoir, The Totally Unscientific City of the Search for Human Happiness, Poundstone will be in Bozeman soon to perform stand-up at the Ellen Theater. I spoke with the beloved public radio comic and began by posing a question from one of her fans, 13-year-old YPR listener Helena Brown of Billings. She asked whether Poundstone prefers live stand-up comedy or taped behind-the-mic radio.
Helena, I am very lucky to get to do both of those things. So it's a little bit like, you know, choosing who your favorite kid is. I don't usually put myself to the task. But I suppose stand-up comedy, just because I've done it longer, I have more flexibility. And, yeah, and I'm a control freak. But, you know, one of the really great things about doing Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, it's a job that was sort of, I couldn't have found a better fit because, unlike most television and radio, I mean, since the day that I first went on there, almost the only thing they ever say to me in the headset is, say whatever you want. And it's nice to be with, you know, it's nice to be with other people. Like when I do Wait, Wait, you know, we actually have pizza together. I have almost kind of sort of a social life there.
So it's a lovely image, imagining you and all of the hosts eating pizza together.
Breaking bread. I used to always bring Peter Reese's Pieces. It's part of the ritual.
You're coming on Friday, August 11th to the Ellen Theater in Bozeman.
Speaking of the Ellen Theater, let me think here. Carl Reiner, the brilliant and wonderful Carl Reiner, has done a HBO documentary about longevity. And Carl himself, he's the guy who wrote and created The Dick Van Dyke Show. He did many other things, but that thing, I probably love him for more than many of the others. But anyways, he's in his early 90s now, and so he did the show about longevity. And in doing so, he includes some performer friends of his as well. And I don't remember the name of this one guy that he was talking about, but it was a peer of his who's... And he was doing this little biography of the man's career. And he shows a picture of the Ellen Theater. I'm assuming it's the Ellen Theater, because I can't imagine that there was another theater named the Ellen Theater.
Right.
But it was like a black and white photograph, you know, from like a long, long time ago, before before John owned it, like a long, long time ago.
Wow.
I thought it was kind of cool. I thought it was my brush with greatness, because I've been to the Ellen Theater. I love it there.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, you know, this new book, what's new with The Totally Unscientific Study of Happiness?
Well, the truth is, it is yet another memoir, which I get to keep writing because I'm not dead yet. And this one, I decided, let's see, there's nothing in this book that I meant to say. The way I told that memoir story was I wrote a series of biographies of towering historic figures, and in the telling of their story, I told my own. Anytime I was reminded of something about myself while I was writing about someone else, I would jump off and tell it. And in this book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, it is a series of experiments doing things that I or other people thought would make me happy. And, you know, the question for me, and I very consciously, when I chose this approach, I figured two things. I figured, in the first place, that doing various experiments, like I take swing dance lessons, I take one of the chapters of the Get Fit experiment, where I do rigorous, really grueling, beyond rigorous, grueling taekwondo and self-defense lessons, one of them I go backpacking with my daughter. There's any number of experiments. But I figured that that alone would be a playground for fun, funny writing. But in addition to that, the question that I had wasn't what I would enjoy doing, but what could I do from which I would get a bounce, you know, when I returned to my regular life, my daily life, which was raising a house full of kids and animals and being a stand-up comic and just being stuck being me 24 hours a day, you know, what could I do that would remain uplifting while I returned to my regular life? So every chapter is written as an experiment with the hypothesis and the conditions and hopefully the funniest field notes ever written. And the analysis part of each chapter is the story of my regular life, going back and saying, hey, you know, now that I'm... In fact, here's just an example. One day I was walking down the alley carrying easily 30 pounds, I would think, of trash bags with kitty litter and cat waste in them. I was walking down the alley to put them in the garbage can, and all of a sudden I realized I felt really good. And I thought, you know, it has to be the working out, because I've carried cat waste down the alley before, and it just doesn't feel that good on its own. There were discoveries made.
Is there any one of those experiments you would recommend readers and listeners would not try?
Would not try? Yeah, actually. I rented a Lamborghini. And I would say, it's not that it wasn't fun to drive it for a few minutes here and there. The irony is that I rented a Lamborghini and drove it. It was just for 24 hours because it was ungodly expensive. But I rented a Lamborghini, drove the most expensive car I will ever drive, the most powerful car I will ever drive, in a city thick with traffic. And so I couldn't go fast. I could get up to speeds of 20 miles per hour because I was always stuck behind somebody. But the truth is, in terms of lasting lift that we're talking about, there was none. People always, that was one, because I told you I did the experiments based on things that I or other people thought would make me happy. That was definitely one that I think, you know, other people believe, like, oh, if I had a fancy sports car, that would be the best. And, I the whole time I had it, I couldn't help thinking about how much, every time you hit the gas, it was like, okay, well, there's $50. So you couldn't help feeling both the gas waste and the money waste, and I don't know. And when I drove around, I just felt like I felt like a jerk a lot. I felt like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm driving by homeless people or drive, you know, just I don't know. In the end, I was happier in my dented van.
How do you stay in higher spirits these days?
Well, some of what I learned from my book, I do continue to use. One thing that I did not mention in my book, actually, but I discovered from a backpacking trip with my daughter, a different daughter than the one that I write about in the book, but we got dehydrated one time when we were backpacking. And obviously, I didn't do that intentionally. I didn't even realize it had happened until it was far too late. But one of the symptoms of dehydration is that I was sinking emotionally like a rock. And I didn't put it together until after I realized that we were, you know, there were other symptoms that allowed me to know that we were dehydrated. And that was the first introduction to the notion that hydration is directly connected to emotional well-being that I had ever heard of in my life. I've since mentioned it on stage 1,000 times, and a lot of people in the audience are like, oh, yeah, we knew that. Like, really? Because I never even had a therapist who said, have a glass of water. But anyways, I try to remain hydrated. Try to do some physical activity. I try to limit my time on social media. They say that people who spend a lot of time on Facebook tend to be depressed. It's because it's a 24-hour-a-day holiday letter drip. That's why it depresses you. It's everybody showing you their best and their finest, and look how wonderful my children are, and look, here we are vacationing in Switzerland. I used to look at that and think to myself, oh, geez, when my son was expelled, we should have gone somewhere. I try to, a little bit of physical activity and do something. I'm lucky because I do a job that gives me oodles of happiness. But also just doing something, whether it's the job that that pays your bills or something outside of that, that makes sure that you're doing something that gives your life a sense of purpose. And the palette for that is many colored.
Paula Poundstone, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with Yellowstone Public Radio today.
It was great talking with you. Thank you.